top Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moment to the Brian Kilmeade Show. We come to you with great pride. First time in 8 years, we're at an RNC. Remember, we're there in 2016. 2020 was at the White House. It was the middle of the pandemic. We're back in action today in Milwaukee, where we had actually covered a debate. So the security is extremely high. But the word is it probably would have been this high anyway. But the assassination attempt that happened on Saturday night, unprecedented in many of our listeners' lifetime. I remember being in 11th grade when Reagan was shot. I remember just I happened to be home that day, and I saw all the coverage. I remember when Frank Reynolds said they thought he was dead. Good God, everybody get this right, and went back and forth. And this was different. We were all covering this live, and with me right now to talk about it. And by the way, it's going to be a huge hour coming your way. We have guests just about every block because we're in Milwaukee. We've got the VIPs. We got Burgess Owens at the bottom of the hour. We have Congressman Derek Van Orden, former Navy SEAL. I was talking to him yesterday. One of his things that he was doing was the Iraqi leaders. He would be in charge of their security, and he could really give us an idea of what should have been done in that Pennsylvania farmyard. With me right now is Brett Baer. Special reports coming up in a long time. But you're going to be on the air all day today, as you were yesterday and the day before. Brett, first off, everything's unprecedented. We've said this so many times, unprecedented. But right now, you're feeling here in the RNC.
Yeah, I think it changed everything, Saturday did. And I think that there is a ton of focus now on hearing from the former president for the first time. Today, we're told he's going to make his vice presidential pick for the VP nominee, likely by midday. The convention's going to gavel in at noon Central Time. And we're told that part of the hoopla will be that VP pick. Sometime during the day, in the afternoon. And so, you know, that's obviously a big, big moment. I think that the tone of this thing changes, that there's a lot of galvanizing of not only Republicans, but others who look to what happened Saturday as a humanizing effect for this president, former president. And if he takes that and uses it, as he said, to tear up his humdinger of a speech against the Democrats and talk more about unity, that could be a big moment for Republicans.
The theme tonight is Make America Wealthy Again. That's Monday. On Tuesday, Make America Safe Once Again. Make America Strong Once Again on Wednesday. And then Thursday, Make America Great Once Again. So a couple of things. President's talking about unity, tore up a speech, as you mentioned. He also, the Trump campaign, according to the New York Times, is concerned that some of the other speeches will be too fiery. He wants them to recognize this moment. I want you to hear a little from the president last night. He only spoke for 6 minutes. It was a Oval Office address. Cut one.
Thankfully, former Trump is not seriously injured. I spoke with him last night. I'm grateful. He's doing well, and Jill and I keep him and his family in our prayers. We also extend our deepest condolences to the family of the victims who was killed. Corey was a husband, a father, a volunteer firefighter, a hero, sheltering his family from those bullets. We should all hold his family and all those injured in our prayers.
So in those 6 minutes, he mentioned, you know, we got to turn down the rhetoric. Paul Pelosi, he mentioned the kidnapping of Governor Whitmer, which we found out was a little bit questionable, but of course you got to take care of every threat. Didn't bring up Steve Scalise. And do we need to put anything on the level of an assassination of a former president who might be the next president? Was that necessary?
I just thought it missed the moment. Obviously, he's under a lot of scrutiny every time he talks now after that debate performance. You know, when you hear former Trump and he says go into the battle box, not the ballot box. I mean, it was, you know, whatever. It's a 6 minute speech on a teleprompter. But we are focused on that now because of post debate. I did think that he had the opportunity to maybe say, even I should stop using words that trigger some of this. You know, he just had a fundraiser the other day where he said he wanted to put Trump in a bullseye. And, you know, there's a little bit of self-own here, but I didn't hear it in that speech. I think he had to do something because he's not going to get a lot of breakthrough this week.
I agree. And, you know, it's always a tough situation. You're in it all the time. What's the tone after a tragic event that could have been a lot worse? We know the shooter was way too close. He got him in with that perimeter. It makes no sense. Local authorities climbing up the wall. They see him. They see each other. The local policeman drops off the wall, and then the shooter becomes an attempted assassin. So he picked up the pace, you would think, of his shot. Maybe he was going to wait longer in the speech to take his shot. We don't know. But all this interaction, the Secret Service, that's another element of it. But then when you see people go out of their way to say almost like he deserved it, I was a little struck by what was going on with Martha Raddatz and George Stephanopoulos. I don't know if you've heard this. Cut 27.
As you point out, those statements from J.D. Vance and Vivek Ramaswamy, of course, President Trump and his supporters have contributed to this violent rhetoric as well.
Well, absolutely, George. We were just looking back this morning at some of the things that former President Trump has said. He warned last March of potential death and destruction if he were charged by the Manhattan District Attorney. Our country is being destroyed as they tell us to be peaceful. Trump in January warned of bedlam in the country if the criminal charges against him succeeded. And of course, in March, he said, now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country.
So she felt it was the perfect time to run through these events where Trump has spoken directly. And we know the bloodbath in particular has been characterized incorrectly. And it's since we see all the other times people have used that term. It's a term used not as actual shooting somebody. But your reaction to that timing? That was scripted.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't think that that's where America's mind is. I think if anything, a moment like this humanizes the former president more. Anybody that's looked through the possibility of death. Listen, I talked to him the other day, and he's lucky to be alive. He acknowledges that he's blessed. He turned his head. The reason he was turning that way is to see a graphic that he brought up. Later in his speech, it was a graphic about border security, and he was going to do it later, but he decided in that speech he was going to ad lib and say, hey, guys, can you bring this up? They bring up the graphic. He turns his head at that moment, and that's why the bullet that you see in that picture from Doug Mills, the New York Times, just grazes his ear. I think that bullet that you see, their experts are saying the reason you see it is it was slowed down after it grazed the top of his ear.
I did not hear that. That is amazing. And Doug Mills is going to be on television on Fox News shortly. He talked to the Washington Times and he spoke to the New York Post yesterday. And what he said is this. He said that reality is just setting in. I rarely look away from the crowd. Had I done it in that moment, well, we would not be talking well today, would we? So he realized that. The other moment that I think is understated is Melania Trump's letter. I thought that was brilliantly written. In fact, I saw an article. Did AI write it? It was so good. And they're putting it to the test. Did AI write it? And just to paraphrase, what I thought was really telling is, you think he's a political animal. You think he's a political machine. But, you know, he's a father. He goes, our reality, our world, Barron's world and my world would have changed had that monster been successful.
Yeah. I thought it was really powerful, too. And I think, and I wrote a piece for FoxNews.com about how that could be a blueprint, for this convention and for going forward. I thought it was really eloquent and really talked to our, better angels. History is often, and you go back to history as well, kind of a guideline. The Reagan shooting in 1981 happens 70 days into his term. He gets shot outside the Washington Hilton. And, he jokes, honey, I forgot to duck, and, is heading into surgery and says, I hope the surgeons are Republicans. And it became legend what happened. It humanized him. At that point, he was not that popular.
Right.
He became really popular and went on, obviously, to win 49 states in 1984. But it's a changing moment. There's a challenge. There's a choice here. And an opportunity, really, for the former president to take it.
Brett Baer right here with me in Milwaukee. We're covering the RNC. Day one is tonight, but there's already a lot of action. Talk about history. I could not believe this. I did not know what happened in Milwaukee, but Teddy Roosevelt was shot in Milwaukee. He was running in 1912 as a third-party Bull Moose candidate. And in it, Jane Hampton Cook, who used to work in the the Bush administration, has now become an esteemed author, does great work. And she's going to be on with us later on today. But this is what Teddy Roosevelt said. He was about to give a speech. He got shot, and he wanted to see the guys. Like, don't hurt him. He goes, what were you thinking? And then he gets shot through the chest. And one of the reasons she said that I didn't get hit was because I had a 50-page speech in his pocket, and they hold up the actual speech with the hole in it. He says, I don't know whether you fully understand, he addresses the people, that I have been shot. Fortunately, I have my manuscript, so you see I was going to make a long speech. Then there is a bullet, and there's a hole in the sheet. There is where the bullet went through and probably saved me from what's going into my heart. The bullet is in me now, so I cannot make a very long speech, but I will try my best. I give you my word. I do not give a rap about being shot, not a rap. That's the epitome of toughness.
It's only a couple.
Finally, dragged him. It happened in Milwaukee.
A couple blocks from here.
By the Starbucks.
Miller Life Theater. It used to be the Milwaukee Theater.
I understand there's a plaque.
Yeah, and so he gets shot by the saloon keeper and walking out of the hotel and then goes over and gives that speech. It was that speech and an eyeglass case in his pocket that prevents him from getting killed. So you can't take down a bull moose, I think is what he said.
Right. So, and the other thing that you'd appreciate, her analogy is with what he says, you can now compare him to Washington. You can compare him to Washington and Teddy Roosevelt. It goes this. They go back to at age 23, 1755. George Washington, in a letter to his brother, said, quote, in the land of the living, by the miraculous care of Providence, that protracted me beyond all human expectations, for I had 4 bullets through my coat and 2 horses shot underneath me, yet I am unhurt. Every officer died in that battle in the French-Indian War. So he always felt as though he was never going to get killed in battle, and that's the way he acted.
So I do think that there is something about divine intervention, and you're probably going to hear that in this speech. You know, he, I think, acknowledges that some aspect of this is bigger than him. And think about that for a convention, you know, that was trying to bring together social conservatives who had a problem with the abortion platform on the, you know, how it was being structured. All of this then kind of goes by the wayside, and there's this galvanizing effect for the people here.
And also I think what hit the president is one of his followers, one of the voters, one of the supporters that was shot was in the same tent as him.
Yeah.
So here he is with his ear bleeding. It's got to be painful. But then he sees this other man struggling for his life. I'm not sure if it was Corey Comparator, who lost his life, this firefighter that jumped over his family and died, or if it was the other two victims. But, man, when you see that right in front of you, it's not like he was brought up in war. As everything that the president's experienced, I'm sure he's never experienced that before.
But that photo of his fist in the air, you know, I asked him about what made him do that. And he said, you know, I was down on the ground. They were holding me down. You should see my arms. They're black and blue. These are big guys. And he said he got up and he wanted to say something at the microphone. He wanted to talk.
Right.
And they said, no, we got to move. And he wanted to make sure the crowd knew he was okay and that he was fighting on. I mean, I just don't think a lot of people in that moment think to do that, but that's him 100%.
Right. I just think that there's people, you know, if you train for that, if you're in West Point, you're doing it every day, the goal is when you get into battle that you're ready to roll with it, and still that's no guarantee. But I remember I asked Dana White, I was talking to Dana White 3 weeks ago at a UFC event, and I talked about that moment when Trump walks out and you walk out with him. He goes, it's thunderous like nothing else I've seen. I go, where'd you rank his toughness compared to the people you see every week? And he said, by far, bar none, the toughest. And I go, in what respect? He goes, in every respect. What he's going through personally, what he has done, what he's been through for this country. He goes, when I know when someone goes in the octagon, they're already tougher than 99% of Americans. Dana White shocked me by saying that he is the toughest. And didn't he show that? I mean, that's the way he comes off. He could talk tough, but when you are tough, that's revealed to
you. Yeah, which is why Dana White is introducing the former president in the speech, I think, Thursday night.
Yeah, he told me in 2016, all his team was like, he was asked. Trump called him up and says, you don't have to, but I need someone. I want to know if you want to speak at the RNC. And he said, if you want me to, I will. And his whole staff, they said, no, it's going to be bad for UFC. It's going to make us political. And he said, that's my friend. I'm not asking your opinion. I'm doing it. And I said, if you're asked again, will you do it? He goes, absolutely. So, obviously, it's not easy being Donald Trump's friend a lot of times when you're in business.
That's right, yeah.
But Elon Musk is now signed up. He's going to be a supporter.
So are
Ken Ackman.
Steve Schwartzman. A lot of people.
These are billionaires.
Yeah. Bill Ackman. There's a lot of folks who are now signing on. And I think he got a lot of calls over the last 24 hours from people that are on all sides of the political spectrum, you know, wishing him well. I will say this. The investigation part is really screwed up. Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas was on another channel. Really didn't sound like he had any thought about anybody being fired or anything going wrong. This is going to be a big, big deal, how this happens, how that guy is in clear view of the former president 150 yards away. I've covered a lot of rallies with presidents, and that just doesn't happen. It does not happen. And
right.
it's something's got to, you know, we have to hear from the Secret Service, and we haven't yet.
All right, Brett Baer, thanks so much. I'll let you go. Are you sticking around for a while?
I mean, I could stay all day.
Okay, good. We'll talk about the investigation when we come back. Maybe we'll pull some of that ABC stuff. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show in Milwaukee. So glad you're here. Don't move.
More of Brian Kilmeade live from the Republican National Convention next.
That is the sound of an expensive car repair about to happen. And to prevent breaking the bank with your out-of-warranty vehicle, you should call CarShield, America's number one automotive protection company. CarShield has helped save drivers big dollars on car repairs. Don't risk paying out of pocket for expensive repairs. For dollars a day, you could have protection coast to coast on up to 5,000 parts and systems. That's protection on your engine, transmission, entertainment system, plus so much more. And your plan also comes with 24/7 roadside assistance, courtesy towing, and rental options. Best of all, your rates will never go up as long as you cover your vehicle. That's money in the bank. All you have to do is call CarShield before a breakdown. Get protection on your car, truck, or SUV that comes with unlimited miles and the peace of mind you get with CarShield. Don't wait another minute. Call CarShield now. Call 800-204-0239. That's 800-204-0239.
Live from the Republican National Convention, it's Brian Kilmeade.
So my role in the Secret Service is the RNC coordinator, so that is my purview. Any questions regarding yesterday's event can be directed to our public affairs office out of D.C.
What were they thinking? Here in Milwaukee, they had a Secret Service presser unprepared to answer about the assassination attempt on the former and perhaps future president of the United States. And no one cares in perspective of the RNC security only as it relates to what happened. Brett Baer joins us now. Brett, we wanted to talk about this investigation. Number one, we find out that the audience at the rally was first to see the shooter before the shots rang out.
It's amazing. I mean, there was the first interview was the BBC interview where the guy explains that he sees the shooter with the gun belly crawling up a roof. He tells a police officer who, you know, looks at it but doesn't engage, and then suddenly the Secret Service doesn't understand. There's a number of those people who see that guy on the roof before he shoots, and then he gets those shots off, and then obviously the counter snipers take him down very quickly. It's remarkable. It's remarkable. It is a direct sight to the principal. It's a direct line only 150 yards away. You know, usually there are people on that roof.
And you said Mayorkas in an interview was almost indifferent. No one's getting fired. I'm not answering any questions.
Yeah, investigating. You know, they're not. There was nothing like we are going to get to the bottom of this and somebody's going to answer for it.
Special report tonight, 5 local, 6 o'clock Eastern. We'll watch Brett Baer.
From Milwaukee, Wisconsin, home of the Republican National Convention, it's Brian Kilmeade.
He is paving the way to become a Vladimir Putin or to become an Adolf Hitler or a Kim Jong-un. That's what he wants to be.
Donald Trump is an enemy of democracy. He's an enemy of this country.
Trump is an enemy of the United States.
People did not take the kind of threats that we saw in the 1930s as seriously as they should. And maybe this would be our last election.
How do you think that does? What do you think that does for the culture? I know Republicans can do it too, but not like what's been done to Trump. Nothing in my lifetime has even gotten close to that. Every other day they were calling him Hitler. Every other day they were saying he's going to end democracy. Every other day he's going to be a dictator on day one. With me right now is Utah Congressman Burgess Owens. Congressman, great to see you.
Brian, good to be with you.
You look like you're getting younger. I mean, if you told me I got to cut this short to go to training camp, I would thoroughly expect you to be going to the Raiders right now.
Well, that's worth the trip here, but if that happened, they mean they're really in trouble. That's a big time problem.
You don't want people tackling you anymore, right?
Those days are done.
So what do you bring me to Saturday? Were you watching television at the time?
You know, I was actually in the gym, and I got the first call from my chief was what was going on. And so, of course, we tuned in. But I'll say this. What is happening and what I see going on across the board, and it's all started with the 4 years of lying. The American people, good people on both sides of the aisle, what we do not like to be done, we don't like to be lied to. And I think what's happening, the brand, the Democrat brand is taking a hit right now. That's going to be an intergenerational hit because once people realize that...
you heard what I just played.
Oh, yeah, it's vitriol.
It's almost every day.
It's every day, and what's going to happen is this. We're going to win President Trump's going to win. We'll get the House and Senate. We're going to start bringing policies that show real compassion looks like, what real America First policies like. And all of a sudden, folks begin to say, you know what? We've been lied to all these years. Let's take another look. Let's have this conversation. And the most powerful thing we can do as a people, start talking to each other. And that's what's beginning to happen already as the temperature is being brought down. We start talking, and that's when the conservative values went out because they're so hopeful, and the people are looking for that.
So today is the day Make America Wealthy Again. Are they going to talk about finance?
Yes.
It's important. But the president, evidently the Trump organization is saying, not the Trump organization, the Trump campaign wants to make sure the speeches are toned down. Not incendiary. He says he's ripping up his former speech. He said it was a humdinger. He's rewriting the whole thing. Your reaction, have you heard this? Is this rippled down to your level?
I have. I think when I see, and I think the Saturday pointed out to everyone, President Trump has been made for this moment. It's his personality. He's a fighter. He always has been. But the way he responded to that moment is iconic, obviously. We can always remember how he did that. So I'm not surprised. What they're looking at right now is how do we heal our country? How can we get to the point where these kind of things do not become normal, that we cannot accept it as normal? And I already seeing the Democratic Party beginning to pull back their vitriol. So,
well, they pulled all their ads down, yes. To their credit. I mean, that is tradition.
Yes.
So they pulled their ads down. But he's doing an interview with Lester Holt. You know, he is going to be giving speeches out in Las Vegas. So we'll see what he can do. He's trying to hold on to his nomination. Think about that. That was the number one story in the world.
Yeah.
And then the other one is the running mate. And now when you have an attempted assassination on a president, where were you in 81?
Yeah.
When Reagan was shot.
Yeah. I remember being in New York when that moment came. And I, about that time, I had left the Democratic Party. I was becoming a Republican. So that was a key moment for me, too. And, again, we respected the way Reagan came under that process. What's going to happen now? People are looking at how does Trump respond to this. And they're going to see a person who loves our country, that is full of optimism. And American people want strength. We want optimism. And he's showing that in the moment. It's a natural reaction with him. So these are the kind of things that's going to be good for our country. And for those that right now, we have a country that's hurting. So there's that group of people, like independents, that truly want to just find out what can we do best to get me moving forward, my family, my protection, feeling safe, all those kind of things. And we're going to be answering those questions over the next couple of days in a very positive way. So President Trump is in a good position, I think.
This is what he told the Washington Examiner. He said, this is a chance to bring the whole country together, even the whole world together. The speech will be a lot different than I would have done 2 years ago. He says it switched from planning to excite the voter base to one that demonstrates his belief that the attack on him at a rally in Pennsylvania had changed the election campaign entirely. Both Republicans and Democrats have acknowledged this in the aftermath, and Trump said he was saved from death because he turned from the crowd to look at a screen showing data he was going to use later in the speech. He said, quote, "The reality is just setting in. I rarely look away from the crowd. Had I not done that in that moment, well, we would not be talking right now, would we?"
I'll say this, and I think the last couple of days we've heard this theme more than we have in a long time. This is providential. This is God's plan. This is
You're very religious.
Oh, yes, absolutely. We know that God has a perfect plan for us. As a country, when we begin to believe that, that's when we become our better selves. And we've been drifting away from that for quite a while. I think we look back on COVID, 9/11, COVID, the riots, all those kind of October 7th. And right now, we're ready to go back toward hope. And that's what President Trump does the best. He's a hopeful warrior. He's a fighter. He believes in the American way. And that's what we need to hear again.
Right.
People are looking forward to it.
We're hearing, getting all different angles and hearing some different sounds. I want you to hear this. And in sports, I don't mean to put life and death in sports, but a lot of times, how do you react under pressure?
Yes.
How do you react when the coach screams in your face? How do you react when the call goes bad? How do you react being run over? How do you act being blamed for giving up a touchdown? You're, as a defensive back, it happens. You know all it's on you. How do you react? That really defines your character. Trump gets shot. His ear is bleeding. He knows, doesn't know how bad it is. Listen to this moment. Cut four.
Come on. Let me get my shoes.
I got you, sir.
Let me get my shoes, sir.
Hold on, your head is bloody.
Sir, we got to move to the bus.
Let me get my shoes.
Okay,
watch out.
He said, let me get my shoes. It turns out he got tackled so hard, he said, by two linebackers, knocked him out of his shoes.
Yeah.
And he had the sensibility to say, yeah, I got to get my shoes if you want me to leave the stage.
What you're seeing, muscle memory. And what we need as a leader is someone who has the courage in the moment, who has the compassion in the moment, and thinks about others like he did. For him to get up and give that pump and to say, fight, 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 that is so American. That's why it's iconic. You have the flag in the background, you have the blue sky, and you have a wounded warrior. That is what American, we drift toward those kind of folks. That's always been who we looked at as leadership. So I think the American people, no matter what side we're on, we want to have that kind of confidence mm-hmm. that the person who is representing us is going to be the strongest, the smartest, the most tenacious person that's going to lead us out. And I think even those who do not like Trump up to this point, they're going to have some respect for what they see, and that's going to be important for
you
us.
You know, I saw the mission before just preparing for the for this week. They were trying to soften his image this week anyway. And if you looked at the platform, which I never really looked at till recently until Trump had such a problem with it. I remember the controversy last time.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't like this platform. I don't stand for this.
Yeah.
This is my convention. And there was huge pushback because they didn't want him to be the 2016 candidate. He knocked it down to maybe, you know, 9 pages. Yeah. You know, and it's very simple. It's to the point. How does that compare to 2025 and the 900-page Heritage Foundation manual, which is extremely well-researched?
I'll say this. Our country's looking for something real simple. What is it that's going to get us moving forward? What gives us a chance to build our businesses, build our families, have this vision that we can go out and build our dreams? So what President Trump is able to do is very simply is talk about what that looks like. It's the inspirational message he's giving. And, again, I can't say enough about that particular picture of him standing up and pumping his fist.
Yeah, means a lot.
It means a lot to all of us. And why do we lean toward sports? We love to see the fighter. We love to see those who come back. We have a philosophy on our team. We cannot control the scoreboard, but we can control the hustle. And what President Trump has done for the last 8 years, he's hustled more than I've been so impressed because the guy just doesn't give up. He doesn't quit. Doesn't slow down. It seems
he golfed yesterday.
Well, he's the guy that when you hit him, he's energized. That takes a special type of person, not to say I need to have a little break for a while.
Right.
So he goes at it. And I'll say this too, Brian. I think that we're going to look back on history and realize that this is the moment that we think we're going to be thankful we're alive, number one. And those of us who have been engaged and really been paying attention, that we're playing our part, whatever that part might be.
Well,
this is
the
moment. This is our moment.
You know, there's
sure.
people, you're not one of them. That always looks to be abrasive, like Matt Gaetz, for example, Steve Bannon, for example. I mean, if they're going to be pressure on them to don't take the unnecessary partisan shots, keep it to policy. For example, if you want men to play in women's sports, that's your party. If you want a weak border, that's your party. That's not inflammatory.
Yeah.
If you want more turmoil in the Middle East, that's your party. If you want Ukraine abandoned, you know, or if you want to slow walking weapons to Ukraine, that's your party. If you want to find a way to ignore Iran's nuclear program, I'm not your party. That, to me, is okay.
Yeah.
It's policy.
Yeah.
It's, I think that both sides keep the personalities out of it. And let's just be honest. Trump is not getting out of NATO.
Yeah.
He is not going past 4 years in office. He's not eradicating the Constitution. He's not going to be a dictator. They know it, and they're saying it anyway. But I think, do you think that there's going to be a pullback on that?
I think what we're going to see is a more united Republican Party we've ever seen. I think because we have Trump at the head of the party, that's the leadership we needed. So the chaos we've had right now, those that have not really respected the leadership we've had, that's going to change. So even though we might get with 15, maybe 20, if that's the case, we get that many. That part doesn't matter. It's who is leading our party at this point and having a commitment to that leadership.
Congressman Burgess Owens of Utah, but formerly of the Raiders and Jets, are with us for a few more minutes.
Yes,
right after this. Nope, you got to go.
More of the Brian Kilmeade Show, live from the Republican National Convention, next. Live from the Republican National Convention, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Number one, take any of the greatest fighters of all time. Trump is number one, the most resilient human being that I've ever met in my life.
In what respect?
Why keep doing this? You know, you got money, you got a great life, you got whatever. Why keep doing this? And the one thing that I can tell you, and this is a fact, this guy loves this country, right? And he loves all Americans, regardless of what color, religion, or whatever it is. He's not a racist. He's a good human being, and he loves America, and he cares about this country. Period. End of story.
And that was Dana White talking to me 3 weeks ago at the Prudential Center before a big event. And that was the day before Donald Trump showed up. And I asked him, what is it like when he walks in with Trump? He says, like nothing else. And I said, what kind of fighter is he? And you heard his answer. With me right now is a guy who knows a lot about fighting, did it for us for decades. And now he's fighting for us in Congress. Congressman Derek Van Orden, welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
Navy SEAL. Your thoughts about Dana White's assessment of the former president?
It is 100% accurate. And, Brian, let me tell you, over the last couple of weeks, some of the most extraordinary circumstances have taken place in the United States in the history. For the first time ever, the United States of America, writ large, the people in the world, saw Joe Biden for who he is, which is unfortunately a mentally incompetent elderly man. And they saw for the first time.
You mean it's not Robert Hur to be playing politics?
Listen, when George Clooney comes out and says, yeah, by the way, when Obama was walking him off the stage, that's the real Joe Biden. When he had to admit that, that's a watershed moment. The other one was this. For the first time, the people in the United States and the world saw President Trump for who he is. And that is an absolute leader that cares about his people, that is willing to literally take a bullet to the head to help this country out.
Did it remind you of battle? Isn't it very, even if you drill for it, you don't know how you're going to respond to gunfire?
You do not train to that. You cannot train to that. So President Trump was standing there delivering a very important speech. He literally got shot in the head, immediately reacted, and then when his Secret Service detail got around him, he didn't cower. He didn't run away. He stood there and defiantly held his hand up. His blood is running across his face and telling the American people to fight. And he's not talking about physically fighting. He's talking about fighting for our freedoms, expressing ourselves as Americans. And we don't have to hide any longer. And there's been a silent majority, and people have been afraid to express their support for Trump. How many people have been thrown out of restaurants? How many people have been chastised on the streets for wearing Make America Great hats again? How many people have been thrown out of their family gatherings? Because we have been essentially politically persecuted for our beliefs, and that's not how the system is
supposed
to work.
Because he's been totally mischaracterized. He's 100%. Like a politician that we've never seen in our lifetime, nor will we. Now, about the actual security, you guarded Iraqi prime ministers after their first Democratic election ever. You know how to secure a very volatile area. Were you disappointed in what you saw?
Yes, absolutely. And I was responsible for the personal security for the first democratically elected prime minister of Iraq during the election cycle. And that there's no other way to describe it other than failure. So if you're single, your one job is to make sure the president of the United States does not get shot and the president of the United States gets shot.
They said it was local police that were responsible for that, and I've been told that is not true.
Listen, someone is always in charge, pal. And the Secret Service is in charge of the security for the president and former president of the United States. So even though local police can be put in positions where they're securing a perimeter. The ultimate responsibility lies with the United States Secret Service. So that is just not true.
So what questions do you have?
Number one, why wasn't there a officer, either a local police officer or a Secret Service officer, on top of that building? That's about 130 meters away in an elevated position.
Is that a hard shot for a guy like you, or just an average hunter?
No, absolutely not. I could make that shot right now.
This guy was kicked off the JV rifle team, but he was on the rifle team.
Listen, man, that is a 130-meter shot with a high-powered rifle. I'm not even sure if he had optics, but I was just at Fort McCoy, which is in my district, great reservist National Guard base. I was doing 600-yard shots with iron sights. So that is not a shot, and it is only by the grace of God that President Trump is alive right now. So, again, that was an abject failure by the Secret Service.
Mayorkas says no one's getting fired. We're investigating. No urgency on ABC today.
Okay. We have been trying to get Mayorkas fired for a long time because he's incompetent. He left the border open. It's still open now, right? The United States Secret Service was moved from the Treasury Department under Homeland Security. This is an incredibly glaring example, again, of Mayorkas' failure.
I heard people don't want this job. Is that true? I thought it was a prestigious job. They have 40% of the people who are put in retirement papers.
It's an incredibly difficult job, and it's made even worse when your leadership simply sucks. That is a term of art. And Mayorkas is a horrible leader. He's being led by Joe Biden, who has proven to be incompetent. And it's very difficult when you're putting your life on the line, literally. You're leaving your family for hundreds of days of years, and you're getting not the support that you need from your leadership.
Who do you want to be the president's running mate? Who gives him the best chance to win?
Like the best, if you look at statistically, it would be Glenn Youngkin, honestly. But
Do you know him?
You know, I've never met him in person. I understand he's very tall, though.
Big basketball player.
That's what I heard. And, you know, I don't play basketball as a wrestler. But any of the folks that are on that short list for VP is going to make an excellent vice president.
How much more confident do you feel about holding the House over the last few weeks than you did over the previous few months?
Well, I mean, I would hate to say that, you know, an attempted assassination of the President of the United States helps with the election stuff, and I think that kind of goes into punditry, which I'm not a big fan of. But I think the reason that we're going to have a greater chance of holding the House and gaining the Senate and President Trump winning is they finally saw that the American people have finally seen how the media has been lying to them for a long period of time, and hopefully now they're going to start listening to us.
They already had a shot for 4 years. Just let them judge by the 4 years.
Look, when the media wing of the Democrat Party, which is the mainstream media, has not been talking about our policy positions, they've been lying to the American public about the policy and how good it is, it's not going to work out. Borders are open. They weren't under Trump. Economy's terrible. It was great under Trump. We were closer to World War III than we've ever been in my lifetime. It was not like that under President Trump.
We want to make sure you don't have to put that uniform back on, so let's try to avoid that. Congressman Derek Van Orden doing a great job in Congress like he did for us in uniform.
Fox News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. I used to be at 48th and 6th, but not for the next week. We're going to be at the RNC. You know, think about it. We have not been at a convention for 8 years. Last time, there was no Democratic convention for the Republicans ahead of the White House, and the pandemic was raging. Should they have had it? Should they be speaking? And the crazy violence outside the White House. Remember Brian Mass with two legs blown off in Iraq, and they had to be confronted by an angry mob. This hour, we're going to be joined by Michael Goodwin and Speaker Johnson, Senator Joni Ernst. We're going to bring you the latest on the assassination of the attempted assassination of the former president of the United States. It is big enough that President Biden was forced to speak on Saturday, came out on Sunday, and then he gave a national address last night. It was 6 minutes. I thought if you were going to do that, I appreciate the overall tone is bring it down a notch, but maybe acknowledging that saying that there's a bullseye on Donald Trump might not have been the best language, an acknowledgement of that, and he could hope maybe on the other side they feel the same way. I'm going to play some of that, what people have been saying over the weekend. A lot of people have been responsible. Get this, Morning Joe, so polarizing that NBC did not put them on the air today. They probably thought we can't trust them not to say, I wish the shooter didn't miss. Michael Goodwin joined us now with the New York Post. One of three people to do an interview with the president in print since the assassination attempt of the New York Post. Michael Goodwin, welcome back. Your thoughts about your conversation with Donald Trump.
Good morning, Brian. look, I think the president is really wrestling with how to respond to this himself. He mentioned that, you know, he tore up his speech, the one he had prepared, that he described as very tough, very hard on the Biden administration, on its policies. And he said it was an excellent speech, but basically he feels that being shot has changed him. Lindsey Graham, who was on the flight with us, said that he believed Trump viewed himself as having a new lease on life. And I think when you talk to a lot of people who have had a near-death experience, it does change something in you. And this is very recent, but you could see Donald Trump wrestling with this. And the speech, I believe, will be the first real sign that he wants to strike a different tone, that he believes it is essential now for Americans to come together. But he is perplexed, and as he described it, it's very difficult to unite this country. I mean, he talked about some minor, just ordinary examples. I shouldn't say minor, but ordinary examples. He said, you know, some people think the border should be open. Some people think it shouldn't be. Some people want men to be able to play on women's sports teams, and others don't. I mean, he talked about those, and just like there's this fundamental difference in how to unite. Now, I don't, you know, I think he's going to come to the obvious conclusion that unity, national unity, doesn't mean complete agreement on everything, but it means that we can deal with each other without hating each other. And yeah. I think that's he's looking for. He's looking for a speech that will convey that.
So I just got to inform you and everybody, this is big news. Judge Eileen Cannon has dismissed the classified documents indictment against Donald Trump. He said the federal judge has looked at this and the charges against former Donald Trump have been dismissed. The indictment on the grounds that special counsel Jack Smith was improperly appointed. She says ruling is remarkable win for Trump, whose lawyers have thrown long shot arguments after long shot arguments to dismiss the case. Other courts have rejected similar arguments to the one that he made in Florida about Smith's unlawful appointment. Upon careful study of the foundational challenges raised in the motion, the court is convinced the special counsel's prosecution of this action breaches two structural cornerstones of our constitutional scheme: the role of Congress in the appointment of constitutional office and the role of Congress in authorizing expenditures by the law. It was a 93-page order. Your reaction, Michael Goodwin? This is huge.
Yes, Brian. Someone just told me that before we came on the air, and I have not had a chance to read any of it. But as you'll remember, this was an argument that I thought came rather late in the process. My first recollection of it was Ed Meese, the former attorney general, and another lawyer made this argument in an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal. That was the first time I saw this. Now, that was months ago, of course, but it was long after the case, I believe, had been, you know, brought, the indictments charged. But you're right. This is a bombshell, as we say, as the old journalism cliche goes, one that really overturns the apple cart. And I must say, President Trump said yesterday, former President Trump said yesterday in the interview that we hear Biden may drop the cases. Now, I don't know if this is what he was talking about, or because he made it sound plural like the other case, too. But he was very optimistic that even Biden was changing as a result of the assassination attempt. That was the context. But I think this has nothing to do with that. This was simply the judge concluding that the argument that Smith was improperly appointed to the position by Merrick Garland is an argument with merit, and that the case can't go forward and a charge brought by Jack Smith. Now, look, I have a lot of problems with Smith. I mean, I think he is a headhunter. He is after Donald Trump. He took a shot at Clarence Thomas the other day. I mean, this is a guy out of control, and he has a history of that. And I think that's why he was appointed by Merrick Garland, to get Donald Trump. Contrast him with Robert Hur, right, who was appointed to investigate Biden, by the books, sober guy who came up with the finding that Biden could not be indicted, could not be convicted because of his memory problems. But Jack Smith went the other direction on Trump, went full jihad on Trump. And so this is a fascinating ruling by the judge.
What about the judge in Washington, D.C.? Being she goes, I will cut my European vacation short just to have a hearing so that people get to see what Donald Trump was up to on January 6th. Excuse me? You should be looking for justice. You stay in Europe. You do your thing. You find out when that court case is ready. It should not be up to you to decide that the American people need to hear that case before or after any election. It just shows a activist judge, which makes people more distrustful of the institution.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, and that idea of an evidence hearing comes out of the way the activists interpreted the Supreme Court ruling on that case, on the immunity issue, that, okay, we'll lay the evidence out there, and so it'll be like a mini trial. And Joe Biden, don't forget, Joe Biden, in one of his speeches said, I believe the people, after the Supreme Court ruling, I believe the people need to hear this information before they go to the polls. So this is clearly a Democratic idea to get this and to use the courts to get this information before voters, because they believe if voters know how dastardly right. they believe Donald Trump is, that Joe Biden will win the election. I mean, you couldn't have a clearer example of using the courts for political purposes.
Just let everyone understand what it was like that day. I'm talking to Michael Goodwin, had the exclusive with President Trump, the first since he was shot, and he is went in golf the next day, but no one has heard from him. He hasn't done an on-camera interview, but Michael Goodwin has the president's respect to such a degree, and it doesn't mean that he writes everything great about President Trump. I'm sure there are things you've written, Michael, he doesn't like, it doesn't matter. He has your there's a mutual respect for what you both do. But first, let people hear what it sounded like Saturday night. Cut to.
They said, take a look at what happened. Oh.
Three other people were shot. The president, they thought the sniper rained down 8 shots. Then he got his head blown off, thankfully. This 20-year-old was just beginning to find things about. Having gone through that experience, you write the story. He writes to say that in one of the quotes I thought was really good, you said he told you the doctor at the hospital said he never saw anything like it. He called it a miracle. And he said Trump, who was sporting a loose, large white bandage that covered his right ear, his staff insisted that no photos be taken. So you flew down there?
Yes. I flew down with him on his plane.
Do you want to expand on that?
Well, it was I tell the story behind it, Brian. I contacted the campaign about 2 weeks ago, and knowing, of course, that he was coming for his third to accept the third time the nominee of his party. And just given what to me seemed a remarkable comeback story after you look back on January 2021 when he left office, I think a lot of us thought he was finished. That was the end of his political career. And I thought it would be nice to be with him as he came back to Milwaukee. It was the completion of his remarkable comeback. And, of course, I had no idea of what was going to happen. And they said yes, that I could join on the plane with him. And then, of course, what happened in Pennsylvania, I assumed, I don't know, maybe everything would change. No, you can still be with him and interview him on the plane. It was remarkable, that what you were playing there, the moment that it happened, while we were talking, Byron York was with us. While we were talking, that segment was playing on a large screen TV on the plane. It was behind me, but facing him, and he was watching it. And he said, for the first time, and our whole conversation was peppered with him saying things like, I'm not supposed to be here, I'm supposed to be dead. And Lindsey Graham was on the plane also, and Graham said to me and Byron that, you know, he has a new lease on life. And, you know, when you hear the stories of near-death experiences that people have, they often come out of it, you know, with a very different view of life. And I think the former president is struggling with that. I mean, he's got, you know, both the horror of almost dying and yet the exhilaration of, you know, you didn't die. You're alive. You can still do things and enjoy life and accomplish things. And I think he very much wants, I believe, his legacy to be different from what it is so far. He wants to win, but he wants the country. He believes, and he has now experienced this firsthand, that the country has gone far too far, far too off track in the hatred, right, and in the and he very much wants to be part of fixing that.
I got to bring you back to this. You said you watched the video with Trump, and he told you this is the first time he was seeing it?
Yes. Yes.
And what was his reaction to seeing the bullet hit him?
He was hard to describe what he was feeling, Brian, but he was very much moved by it. I mean, at times he looked almost kind of disgusted, but I think it wasn't a disgust in the sense of an anger or anything like that. It was rather just awful to see himself be shot and to know how he felt, what his personal reaction was, when particularly on the when the Secret Service came and tackled him and covered him with their shielded him with their own bodies. He was very moved by that. And, you know, he cleared up one of the mysteries. On the video, you can hear him saying, wait for my shoes. I have to get my shoes. And he said, it's because when they tackled me, when they took me down, he said, my shoes flew off. And he said, my shoes are tight. So he said, that's how hard they hit me. And he showed a big bruise on his right forearm. And he said, these guys are like linebackers. He is so grateful to the service agents. I got to talk to a couple of them, of course, can't quote them or anything, but these are remarkable people. Think about it. They shield their client with their own bodies. I mean, how much more dedication can a human being give?
Michael, I just want to bring you to one passage in Melania Trump's brilliant letter. She says this: a monster who recognized my husband as an inhuman political machine attempted to wring out Donald's passion, his laughter, his ingenuity, love of music, and inspiration. The core facets of my husband's life as human side were buried below the political machine, the generous and caring man who I've been with through the best of times and the worst of times. People forget that he's a human being.
Yes. No, that's very well said, Brian. I mean, he's like a machine in his ability to keep going, but he's not a machine. And he has been through things. Just leave aside whether you think fairly or unfairly. When you think of all the court cases and the trying to take away his business and bankrupt him and put him in jail and all these things. And I've spent time with him one day after one of those grueling court days, horrible day in court for him. He was telling stories, making jokes. I mean, his ability to keep going is something. It's a marvel.
Well, congrats. Well, the respect he has for you is evident. You got on that plane after he almost was killed, and he gave you his exact inner thoughts, and it's in a column in the New York Post. Michael Goodwin, congratulations on a especially great historic column.
Thank you very much, Brian. I really appreciate that.
You got it. Back in a moment. It's Joni Ernst and then Speaker Johnson. Busy show in Milwaukee. So glad you're here.
More of the Brian Kilmeade Show, live from the Republican National Convention, next. Live from the Republican National Convention, it's Brian Kilmeade.
And he was up there for a couple of minutes.
He was up
you
there.
You saw him up there for a couple of minutes.
Absolutely. At least three and to 4 minutes.
And you were telling
yep.
the police from the Secret Service.
We were telling the police. We were pointing at him for the Secret Service, who were looking at us from the top of the barn. They were looking at us the whole time when we were standing by that tree.
Could they see
binoculars.
Him? Could they see him?
Probably not, because the roof, the way the slope went, he was behind where they could see. But why is there not Secret Service on all of these roofs here?
That is the eyewitness account talking to the BBC about what they saw before the shooting. Before the shooting. That's what he was trying to say. He could not get any cop to pay attention to him. And we're going to find out, because the Secret Service is going to be giving a classified briefing on Capitol Hill tomorrow. That's Tuesday. We come to you from Milwaukee. Almost all the Republicans are here, many of which are speaking. Today is a wealth theme. There's going to be Keep America Safe. There's going to get America Strong. And there's going to be sometime, we believe, in the next couple of hours, it looks like the president is going to be naming his running mate. Also, the documents case has been dismissed by Eileen Cannon over in Florida, saying Jack Smith was unlawfully appointed. That is huge news, a major victory for the former first president of the United States. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show in Milwaukee, side of the RNC.
From Milwaukee, Wisconsin, home of the Republican National Convention, it's Brian Kilmeade.
But the bottom line is, every Secret Service agent knows, I've done hundreds of them, that the true security of the site rests with the advance agent. And we learned a long time ago, as a matter of fact, in 1963, when President Kennedy was shot, if you're up in an elevated position and you have a rifle, that you can easily do a lot of damage to the president and to others. When you go onto a site, where are the high places? How do we protect them?
That is Tim Miller talking about his former Secret Service agent, talking about his years of experience and the failure of the Secret Service. I mean, the courage is no doubt. It's fantastic to jump on the president like that. And people thought, well, the problem was, how do you get the shot off? Well, he was outside the perimeter. It must have been one of those sniper rifles. Next thing you know, it's 150 yards, and you see the shot of the building. You think, how could anyone get up there? How could they be allowed to get up there? With me now is Iowa Senator Joni Ernst. Senator, your thoughts about what Tim Miller just said. Whoever did advance either didn't do a good job, or someone didn't place someone where he recommended they place somebody. Bottom line is, nobody was on that building.
Yes, bottom line, Brian.
Except
so,
the killer, so the would-be assassin.
Yes, and I'm not going to critique the Secret Service. I don't know enough about the background and what went on. But what I can tell you from a military perspective, as a veteran, someone who's worked a lot with different law enforcement agencies, if you hold the high ground, you have the upper hand. And obviously, there was high ground that was absolutely unsecured. Big failure, Brian.
So is that a hard shot to take for someone experienced?
No, that's not a hard shot. That's not a hard shot.
And one thing seems to be, when the local policeman went up the building and saw that he had a rifle and he turned it on him, and then he went down, within 2 seconds, the sniper turned around, the 20-year-old turned around and shot at the president, the former president, hit him in the ear, and then you find out that he gets hit in the ear only because he was checking a graph that he was supposed to use later in the show, and he leaned over to that side. He said, I never lose eye contact with my audience, and I leaned just that one time, and it clipped his ear.
Brian, it's a God thing. It's a God thing. I'm serious.
Yeah.
You know, just a fraction of a second earlier, later, so many different issues that could have happened, and it didn't. It didn't. Unfortunately, we did see the loss of an innocent man, others that were
Seems
wounded.
Seems like an extraordinary guy, firefighter,
yes.
Jumped on his daughter and his
yes.
wife, and then he dies.
And he dies. But bottom line, the president is still with us, and what we saw coming from President Trump was an inspirational move in the face of adversity, in the face of chaos, people not knowing what was going on. You saw Donald Trump stand up and signal to the crowd that he was okay. and in essence signaling America is going to be okay. So this is a leader. This is someone who, after having a failed assassination attempt, rallied the troops seconds after being shot at, right, and is attending the Republican National Convention to give speeches
and
rally everyone.
And golf the next day with Lindsey Graham. So one of the people that was shot is clinging to life is David Dutch, 57 years old. The other one is James Copenhaver, 74 years old, of Moon Township. And then the one who lost his life, sadly, at the age of 50 is firefighter Corey Compentor. And we're going to learn more about him in the coming days. I thought Governor Shapiro was really strong yesterday,
yes,
talking about him extemporaneously from the heart. I want you to hear a little from the current president and tell me what you thought of this portion of his 6-minute speech. Mm-hmm. Cut one.
Thankfully, former Trump is not seriously injured. I spoke with him last night. And I'm grateful. He's doing well. And Jill and I keep him and his family in our prayers. We also extend our deepest condolences to the family of the victims who was killed. Corey was a husband, a father, a volunteer firefighter, a hero, sheltering his family from those bullets. We should all hold his family and all those injured in our prayers.
I thought it was unnecessary later in the speech to say, well, they tried to kidnap Governor Whitmer, and we know about Paul Pelosi. Excuse me. There's a former president. And if you're going to bring up incidents, there's no reason to bring up there. And number two, you got to include Steve Scalise.
Oh, my heavens, yes.
So
absolutely.
What's the point? I looked at the speech and I said, wow, that's, you have to do something, but I'm not sure anyone benefited from that.
Well, no. And
I liked the beginning when he said turn it down a notch.
Right. And what he was trying to do, what President Biden was trying to do, is equivocate. Okay, well, you know, we had this incident against former President Trump, but if you look back, let's stop that. Let's stop it. Let's focus. This is a former president of the United States, likely to, well, he will be nominated here in the next couple of days here at the RNC. He is your campaign opponent. He is a former president. He has a level of stature across the United States. And you're going back and trying to compare to other incidents in the past. This is why things continue to happen, is because we can't just simply say this was wrong.
Got it.
And
by the
stop.
And we just have to also talk about the breaking news, breaking after breaking after breaking. But the documents case filed against President Trump for taking the documents, they say unlawfully, to Mar-a-Lago, where we famously had the FBI raid, and then the charges from Jack Smith, has been tossed. And the reason is, in 90-page decision, hard to digest in the middle of a show, is because Jack Smith was appointed unconstitutionally.
Correct. That's my understanding of the situation. Again, we're having a lot of information thrown at us. Just saw it flash across the TV screen just a minute back, but essentially, yes, he had not been properly appointed. It does seem to be unconstitutional. So the judge obviously made a very fair decision there.
So there's going to be speeches today, and we talk about wealth today. We're going to talk about safety, immigration, everything, keep America wealthy, keep it safe, all these things. But the one thing that the Trump campaign wants, according to the New York Times, is the speakers to tone it down.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to hear the rhetoric. Do you think this is something we're going to gradually get over and back to talking about President Trump, convicted criminal who's going to eradicate the Constitution, and he's going to refuse to leave office? Do you think that changes more than just the next week?
Well, I hope it does.
But
I see Democrats are going to be desperate. I mean, look, they are in disarray. They have got a candidate who can't string a sentence together without stumbling or making mistakes. So they are going to reach a level of desperation. They're either going to have Joe Biden as the candidate or they're going to pull him. Something will happen at the last minute. Total disarray. They're going to have to resort to underhanded tactics.
I want you to hear Brett Baer just got some original reporting and reaction from Donald Trump. Here's what Brett just relayed.
We just got off the phone with the former president, and he said this: I am thrilled that a judge had the courage and wisdom to do this. This has big, big implications, not just for this case, but for other cases. The special counsel worked with everyone to try to take me down. This is a big, big deal. It only makes this convention more positive. this will be an amazing week. He said again and again that this was a big, big decision. He pointed to, you know, Justice Thomas and the questioning in the Supreme Court on this very issue about the special counsel, but seemed to indicate that he thought that this would have implications for other cases. He did confirm that he's going to make a VP choice today.
Wow, and that's going to be announced today, they think.
Yes.
Do you have a sense of who it could be?
Well, we've heard a lot of discussion, and there's a lot of speculation. There are a number of my colleagues in the United States Senate that are being considered.
In the United States. You'll narrow it down.
In the United States,
yes.
Senate.
Oh, okay. So it will be an American.
Three.
You can confirm
that. It will be an American.
All right. Thank you, Senator Ernst. I owe you a favor. You really are breaking news with me today. Right.
I love it, but I am so excited. And I've talked to many people here today already, and they just want to know who that VP pick is, because we're ready to get out on the trail and start campaigning for President Trump and whoever that VP pick is.
Because, look, when it comes to the Senate, and the president wants the Senate almost as bad as the White House, it doesn't matter, obviously, if he doesn't win it, because they'll try to impeach him right away. I mean, they're just going to make a maneuver. They'll say, listen, out of the January 6th case, we're taking it over. And that means Pennsylvania has got to come. Dave McCormick's got to close the gap. Tim Sheehy's got to close the gap over in Montana. You got to feel good about Jim Justice in West Virginia. And then you got to see if Mike Rogers can do it in Michigan. So there, all these races, the Republicans seem off a point or two.
Oh, gosh, yes. And yeah. I think we'll close that gap the closer we get.
Got
Absolutely.
It. Senator Joni Ernst, always great to talk to you, especially on these exciting times.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. Thanks great for the coverage.
All right, absolutely. We're here in Milwaukee at the RNC. When we come back, Speaker Johnson. Don't move.
Stay tuned for more of Brian Kilmeade, live from the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, next. From Milwaukee, Wisconsin, home of the Republican National Convention, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we're back. Joining us now is Speaker Johnson, getting set to, I imagine, come over to Milwaukee shortly, or he's got his hands full, especially after the assassination attempt on President Trump's life that cost the life of a firefighter who just wanted to go with his family to support the former president of the United States and make sure that he becomes the future president of the United States. But we're trying to get to the bottom of this. Speaker Johnson, you did not waste much time saying we need some answers from the Secret Service. What is your biggest question that you want answered today? And have you begun to get those answers?
Yes. Look, thanks, Brian. Great to talk with you. I began within hours of the event. I got Secretary Mayorkas on the telephone, the head of DHS, of course, and started asking him the pointed questions. And it was very concerning to me, Brian, to be very frank, that he didn't have a lot of those answers. I mean, one of the first questions I asked him was, to me, what is the most obvious? Where were the drones? I mean, it is standard practice now for drones to be in the air over an event like this. You would have obviously seen someone on a rooftop. Secretary Mayorkas did not know the answer to that question when I spoke to him several hours after the event. So we are compiling now a longer list of very serious and important questions that must be answered immediately. I had a call yesterday. I organized with all the House Republicans. Some of them were traveling here to Milwaukee to come to the convention, and others were back in their districts and all over the place. We're blessed in our Republican conference among House members. We have former FBI agent, we got former law enforcement guys, military guys, experts in all of these issues. And so they are working together. We're all working together to compile this list of questions that I'm going to send to Mayorkas today. The first hearing, right. Actual oversight hearing, is scheduled for next Monday, and that will be with the director of the Secret Service, Ms. Cheadle, and she's got a lot to answer for.
So we understand there's a report by Susan Crabtree of Real Clear Politics that diverted resources to Jill Biden's event in Pennsylvania and away from Trump's event. Now, they have denied this. Is there anything to it? Does this make you want to get – have you heard anything about this?
I've heard a lot of rumors, a lot of conjecture. As Speaker of the House, I've got a volatile position here. I don't want to comment on it before we get things verified. But I will say that it is an allocation of personnel that's always an issue. You know, we need more Secret Service persons, and certainly to protect Donald J. Trump, who is a former president. He's not just a candidate. He's actually a former president. He already has Secret Service detail. But he's also the most persecuted and attacked political figure in the history of the United States since Abraham Lincoln, right? I mean, obviously, he has threats upon his life every single day. And so he needs the maximum amount of security at whatever cost. And I don't know for certain if that was provided here. And that's what we're trying to find out. It's inexcusable if it was not.
So, Speaker Johnson, I also got to give you the other to ask you to comment on the other breaking news. And that is the documents case has been tossed out by Eileen Cannon. And because Jack Smith, she says, was appointed unconstitutionally, so the case is done. I'm sure there'll be an appeal, but your reaction to this?
Well, right. I mean, you know, I used to be a constitutional law litigator, so I'm fascinated to read the opinion, but I've been going down Media Row this morning, and it broke while I was talking with Ben Shapiro. So I haven't had a chance to read the opinion yet. I'll say, obviously, I believe that is the right result. I mean, we have been making lots of noise about this, been very vocal in our issues with Jack Smith and how he was appointed and what he's been doing since he was. This is part of the Democrats' lawfare, and I think it's backfired, and the voters are going to make the ultimate verdict, thankfully, on November 5. But this is the right result. I think Judge Cannon's done the right thing here. Look forward to reading that opinion and digging into it. But we have already been doing Chairman Jordan of the House Judiciary Committee and Chairman Comer of the Oversight Committee in the House. We've all been working together to rein in the abuses of Special Counsel Jack Smith, but this is a very welcomed outcome.
I mean, Mayorkas, didn't they pull this investigation from Mayorkas and give it to Garland? Doesn't that show his incompetence?
Yeah, there's a lot of incompetence in this administration. I mean, it's been so frustrating to us. Everything's a mess. You know, they really have politicized and weaponized the Department of Justice itself, Brian. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you and I have talked before about what a threat that is to our system of government itself. I mean, the people have to trust the justice system. They have to believe that justice is equal and it's blind and that there's not two standards of it. And they don't see that right now. And that's been a real threat. So I think mm-hmm. that we can reverse that. I think we can restore the people's trust. But it begins with bringing accountability. And that's what we're dialed in on.
So I want to bring you back to Saturday night. And before we do, for our listeners, here's how it sounded at the Trump rally. It looked like a rally right before the RNC as the president had a lot of wind at his back. But here goes the most dangerous thing that's ever happened to him. Cut two.
They said, take a look at what happened. Oh.
I mean, that just brings it all back. Your reaction. How did you know? Were you watching the event? How were you contacted, Speaker?
The audio is sickening to just listen to again, Brian. But yes, I was in Louisiana in my district, and we were working on some things to prepare to come to the convention. I'll be chairing the convention on the floor here in the next few hours. And we were putting all that together. We had the television on in the background, and, you know, I just kind of had it on a low hum because I've been to these rallies so many, and I kind of know what he's going to say. But that happened, and we all just froze. Everyone stood there, and, you know, it was one of those moments you'll never forget. By God's grace, it's a miracle. I mean, it is a miracle. It's hard for anyone to deny the hand of God intervening. Brian, you're a historian, and you're fascinated by these things as I am. What I recalled immediately was the old tales of the bulletproof George Washington. And you remember the famous story. You know, you talked about it before. He was riding in the woods in the French and Indian War. They all took shots at him. They missed him, and he took off his coat, and he had four bullet holes through his coat, but he wasn't taken down. Washington wrote about that event, that it was the hand of Providence that prevented him from dying. He was just a young army colonel at the time. But here's the interesting thing. When I went back to read the story, and I was reminded that event took place less than 50 miles from the spot where Donald Trump evaded a bullet as well. I mean, I don't know. It's coincidence, right? But a very interesting event in history, also in July, also in Pennsylvania, very close to there. Look, God intervenes in the affairs
of men. How about Teddy Roosevelt get blocked
right,
having
right.
a bullet be blocked and slowed down by a speech in Milwaukee?
Exactly. Incredible. Incredible stuff. I mean, we're living in faithful moments, and we're making history day by day. And I love the comments that President Trump has been sharing the last couple of days. He recognizes this moment. He believes he's been spared by God. He says it himself. I do as well. We all do. And he has a real vision for leading the country back to a unified, powerful moment. And I think that's really important.
Speaker Mike Johnson, thanks so much. We look forward to catching up to you again in the halls here in Milwaukee. Thank you.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back. We're in Milwaukee, side of the RNC this year. It's going to be a busy day. Today's theme is Make America Wealthy Again. We expect to see possibly the former president of the United States taking the stage. One thing I saw that was interesting, he gave interviews to Washington Examiner, Byron York, but he gave the first one to New York Post's own, Michael Goodwin, and they said no pictures because he had the bandage on his ear. He was shot in his ear. If you were living in another planet and just came back from the space station, maybe you were depending on a Boeing space vehicle to bring you back, and you've been locked out of the news. The assassination tape attempt on the former president's life, it skinned his ear, but it took the life of a firefighter, 50 years old, who shielded his two children. Two others are clinging to life, one 74, and one younger former Marine. He's 54. So they're both clinging to life just because they wanted to support the former president of the United States. With us, joining us this hour, it's going to be Bernie Moreno. He wants to be the next senator from Ohio. He maybe has some momentum now. Kaylee McGee White will be with us. Jane Hampton Cook, the historian, as well as Josh Krasauer right now. And Josh joins us now. He's a political insider, Fox News Radio. Josh, welcome back. We think we're hours away from the former president making a VP pick. Do you have a sense of where he's going? Because no one seems to know.
Yeah, I mean, boy, I think the Veep stakes have sort of been sort of secondary given everything that's happened these last few days. Though I think the question is whether he kind of wants to build bridges with some of the skeptics within the Republican Party, or build and broaden the appeal, given that there's a moment in time right now where I think Trump is probably going to see a bounce in the polls. I think there's a lot of sympathy, and he's talking about a unified message. He's trying to unite the country at this convention, which is a real change. So I think he could go in that direction. I mean, I couldn't help but think that Tim Scott would almost be a perfect pick for that kind of message, for that optimistic, can-do, conservative messaging, even though he hasn't really been mentioned on the final, the most cited list of finalists on the Veep stakes front. You know, the buzz has been centered around J.D. Vance, who I think is sort of more of the base-first selection, someone that would get a lot of Trump supporters excited, but is not politically tested and, frankly, could you know, be more of the type of pick that would be designed to show you're a fighter and you're really coming after the left. Now, if the moment has changed after what happened on Saturday, maybe you go in a different direction. But the buzz has been around Vance over the last couple of days. But I wonder if there's going to be a surprise in the works, especially given everything that's happened.
Today's theme is Make America Wealthy Again here at the RNC in Milwaukee. Tomorrow's got to be Make It Safe. 17th, that'll be Wednesday, it'll make it strong. And Thursday, Make America Great Once Again, be the overall theme. Nikki Haley's going to be here. That's a good move. She was invited. She accepted. She already released all her delegates. I think that's a good move. He told me last week he was unsure about doing that. But he actually says some very blunt things in this interview with Michael Goodwin. He said the doctor said he'd never seen anything like this. He called it a miracle. The former president shared that his very surreal experience that nearly ended his life. During the interview, he said, "I should not even be here." When it came to his shoes, he said he was tackled so hard he was knocked out of his shoes by the Secret Service. He had bruises on his arms. Your reaction 48 hours later, Josh?
Yeah, it was a remarkable interview with Michael Goodwin. I mean, it shows how close we were on Saturday to just an absolutely awful moment in American history. And Trump seems to have been, it almost sounds like a new Trump. I mean, it seems like he realizes how close to death he was. And I think that changes you. So it's a remarkable interview. Trump, it sounds like the focus of this convention is going to be on uniting the country and sort of a unique place for Trump to be in. But I think we are going to hear sort of a different tone. We heard it in that interview, certainly from the president, former president. And I think you're going to be hearing a lot from all the speakers on stage. Nikki Haley, you mentioned Nikki Haley coming in. I think she's speaking Tuesday night. That's a big shift. And she's going to be speaking on stage. So this is a united party. It's going to be, I think, a more optimistic sounding convention. And it's one where the wind is at Donald Trump's back after all the assassination attempts on Saturday.
He is, and then if you think what's happening on the other side, the documents case has just been dismissed by Eileen Cannon. The judge said he was appointed unconstitutionally, so they'll appeal that, but that was supposed to be the strongest case that William Barr said is going to get him in the most trouble, but it's gone. If you think about the sentencing push to September, that certainly helps. The chaos around the Georgia case, the unprofessional Keystone Cops approach to doing it, puts that case in doubt. And then if you're going to say he was legally appointed, unconstitutionally appointed for the documents case, how does Jack Smith run the January 6th case, right?
It was interesting that Trump in that New York Post interview, I don't know if he had any basis for saying this, but it sounded like he thought that Biden might drop the October 7th case. I have no idea if that's true or not, but he mentioned that in the interview. And then, you know, hours later, you hear about the Eileen Cannon dropping what was probably the most serious legal case, the most threatened that Trump would be legally of those big cases in the Mar-a-Lago documents case, and Trump, you know, now it's no more. So I mean, Trump has, I mean, talk about a political month. I mean, I think Trump was already in pretty good shape even you know, a month ago, but now it seems like everything has been moving his way, and legally, you have a lot less to worry about right now.
Yeah, I mean, the New York Times says judge dismisses classified documents case, appeal expected. Judge dismisses classified documents case against Trump. That's just the cover of the Washington Post, so that's in there. When you talk about the near miss on the president, and then you talk about President Biden last night, your thoughts about his tone, let's listen, cut one.
Thankfully, former Trump is not seriously injured. I spoke with him last night. I'm grateful. He's doing well, and Jill and I keep him and his family in our prayers. We also extend our deepest condolences to the family of the victims who was killed. Corey was a husband, a father, a volunteer firefighter, a hero, sheltering his family from those bullets. We should all hold his family and all those injured in our prayers.
Right. He also went on to say, well, about Paul Pelosi and what about Governor Whitmer? That is not in the same classification as this. That was, to me, totally gratuitous and unnecessary.
Yeah, look, I think Biden is – I think he tried his best with the Oval Office speech last night, trying to calm down the country. That's the role of a president, not a presidential candidate, but the president. That's frankly his brand. I mean, that was sort of what he argued for why voters should support him in the first place when he ran for office in 2019. The soul of America, healing the soul of America, and a return to normalcy. So, I mean, the problem is, you compare Biden's speech last night with Governor Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania and what he had to say earlier in the day. And look, I thought when I listened to Governor Shapiro memorialize the Butler County firefighter who tragically lost his life but going to a political rally, and I with tears in my eyes. I mean, he really was moving, and really he said something that was talking about how he was a girl dad and he really cared about his community. And, you know, he died because he supported Donald Trump. Like, it really was something moving to hear the Pennsylvania governor say that. You know, Biden, I think, said the right things on paper, but he just doesn't have the passion, the empathy, the compassion that came out of that speech. So, I mean, I think strategically they're you know, taking down their political ads, taking down the political rhetoric, trying to tone things down. But, you know, you just don't have a president who's able to kind of summon the kind of emotions that I think is necessary in this moment, and it showed last night.
All right. Josh, finally, just make your prediction. Who do you think he's going to name tonight as a running back?
I think there'll be a surprise. I know we've been talking a lot, Brian, about Vance and Burgum and Rubio. I wonder if my gut says there might be a fourth candidate in the mix, if I had to guess.
Okay, because Sonny Joni Ernst said Ben Carson. I was a little shocked by that. So I know the odds say it's J.D. Vance. I also know the president made some comments how strong Tim Scott has been. So I also know that every time people try to eliminate Tim Scott, he keeps saying,
"Yeah,
I really like Timmy."
Well, so. Tim Scott. I mean, this is the. I mean, if there's any moment for Tim Scott, Tim Scott's political stock over the last 3 days should go up, because he is the man for the moment in it like this. He's very the hope, the optimism, the message that he's brought to the Senate. Feels like he's the man for the moment. So I know he wasn't on the. He hasn't been mentioned nearly as much as the top three.
Go get him, Josh. I'll hope to see you in the hall.
Thanks,
over
Brian.
Over in Milwaukee,
we'll see
at the RNC. Josh Krasjow. And we'll see what's going to happen. We know the documents case has been dismissed. That's big news. We know the vice presidential candidate will be named today, according to President Trump. That's big news. President's recovery is also news, and we hope for those two victims that are struggling for their lives over in Pennsylvania after Saturday's shooting. That is also something we're keeping an eye on, along with finding out more additional information on who this 20-year-old shooter is and what did anyone know what he was up to. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. When we come back, in perspective, what Donald Trump went through and why a noted historian says you can now put him in the category with George Washington and Teddy Roosevelt. I'll explain when we come back.
More of Brian Kilmeade live from the Republican National Convention next. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
A former president was shot. An American citizen killed while simply exercising his freedom to support the candidate of his choosing. We cannot, we must not go down this road in America. We've traveled before throughout our history.
And that was Joe Biden, a little excerpt from his about three remarks since the horrific incident that happened on Saturday night with President Trump escaping an assassination attempt while three other people were hit. One has lost their life. Joining us now, someone who immediately put pen to paper and said, I got to put this in perspective and why Donald Trump now sits in a place in many ways with Teddy Roosevelt and George Washington. Let's bring in Jane Hampton Cook, a best-selling author and noted historian. Jane, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Jane, it didn't take you long to quickly pen a column to say this reminds me of Teddy Roosevelt and George Washington. Describe it.
Why? So I was initially thinking about Roosevelt because he was nearly assassinated. He was a former president at the time, but he was running for president again. It was 1912. And the amazing thing about that shooting, he was getting out of a car and his glasses case and his speech, which was really thick, was in his coat pocket, and the bullet was slowed down and it entered his chest, but it didn't get to his heart. And then it goes on to give a speech. He says, ladies and gentlemen, it takes more than that to kill a bull moose. And he speaks for 15 minutes before he goes to the hospital. That's just the larger than life, determined, sometimes defiant personality. And that reminds me a lot of Donald Trump. There's some similarities there, you know. And then George Washington was a young man on the battlefield in 1755, and he had four bullets shot through his coat and two horses shot from under him, but he remained unhurt. And he credited Providence in a letter that he wrote to his mother and brother that it was by the miraculous care of Providence that he was in the land of the living. And so we've seen other times when it's just, it's hard to explain, you know, why that shot grazed Trump's ear. And if it had been a little bit more in a different direction, we would have a different story today.
And, you know, Teddy Roosevelt originally wanted to see the shooter. Why'd you do that? He asked him, why'd you shoot me? And they showed the actual 50-page speech existence with a hole in it. You have in your column the picture of the papers with a bullet hole in them.
Yes, it's just so remarkable. And, you know, there was some anarchist kind of mentality back then. And I think in that particular case, there was some mental illness on the part of the shooter. But, you know, that willingness to stand up and fight and say, I'm not going to let you, you know, do this to me. I'm going to show a sign of support to my supporters, which is what, you know, of course, President Trump did so well with the fist pumping. And I think that gave people immediate reassurance, you know, that he was not down, you know, that he was up and was going to go get treatment for his injury. And so, you know, it's just something that we don't see miracles like that very often. And, you know, I thought about Andrew Jackson, because he had a close call like that, too, in the Capitol when he was president. Someone pointed at him point blank and fired, but the gun misfired. And he did it again, and the gun misfired a second time. And by this point, Andrew Jackson took his cane and started whacking the guy. And so So, you know, we've had some men in our nation's history as presidents who were strong leaders, and they were bold, and they had strong personalities. And, you know, that's what we're seeing right now in President Trump, is just a strong leader who has a clear vision. And, you know, I wonder if I were in his position, if I would have pre-thought, you know, someday if something like this ever happens, how am I going to respond? I don't know that he's ever pre-thought it, but you have to know that he was well aware of the risk he's been taking in being in public and being in these large events. And, you know, he thanks the Secret Service for their protection of him. And he's, you know, it sounds like we're going to have a little different tone this convention than we might have, that he wants to take things in a more uplifting direction. And I think that's good for the country. We need that because we've seen so much vitriol. And especially Trump has taken a big brunt of a lot of things thrown at him, you know, especially
And he said this about his speech. He said, I was going to give on Thursday. It was going to be a humdinger. Had this not happened, we would have been one of the most incredible speeches. Honestly, it's going to be a whole lot different now. There's a chance to bring the whole country, even the whole world together. The speech will be different, a lot different than it would have been. And he also, the camp also wants and does have a concern that these speeches at the convention not involving the Trump team will be too fiery. He does not want that tone for it, and I think he could control it if he made that known. In terms of the actual incidents, the doctor at the hospital said he never saw anything like it. He called it a miracle. He had a large bandage on his ear. They did not want to take and get pictures of it. The former president shared the very surreal experience that nearly ended his life. Michael Goodwin said that they watched it back. He said for the first time together, and he said, I shouldn't be here. I should be dead.
Yeah. And, you know, back in the 1770s, they used the term providence to describe God's presence. And I've heard many people, you know, in the news in the past 2 days use that term, you know, that this is a miracle from God and the Almighty. And, you know, President Trump has a new lease on life. And we're going to get that on Thursday.
Right. And In your column, you talk about the exact quote, George Washington, 23 years old, writing back to his brother saying, I got 4 bullets in me, 2 hard shorts from out underneath me. All the other officers, I believe, were killed, and he survived. And that gave him a sense of imperviousness, if that's a word, if that's the suffix to put on that word, in 1776 when this whole war got started. But, Jane, where do we get your column? Where can people read more?
So I have a Substack, janehamptoncook.substack.com, and I have some new children's books about patriotism, and you can find out about those on janecook.com or on Amazon. And so we're just,
fantastic,
you know, gearing up for the 250th anniversary in 2 years of America's birthday.
Absolutely. You know what? We could go over and see where Teddy Roosevelt was shot in Milwaukee all those years ago in 1912. We're going to make sure to do that. Thanks so much, Jane Hampton Cook. Appreciate it. Kaylee McGee White next. Brian Kilmeade Show from Milwaukee. Don't move.
Live from the Republican National Convention, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Well, let me tell you, those discussions are still going on. I think a lot of folks obviously are still dealing with the tragedy of yesterday, the death of an American, 2 others critically wounded, and the assassination attempt on the President of the United States. I know President Biden is the nominee right now, and we're heading to our own convention. And I think the president knows he has a lot of work to do what's important, which is to unify the Democratic Party and get excitement and enthusiasm.
So it's amazing to me this guy doesn't take a stand on anything. And again, he could easily have said what Chris Coons did. He's our nominee. We're going to stick with him unless they see something else. Instead, we're considering a bunch of other options. Cory Booker hasn't even called out Senator Menendez, which is nuts. The guy's a criminal, and other people like Senator Fetterman said, you got to be kidding me. How could he be in on intelligence briefings when he's got gold bars in his pockets taken from an Egyptian billionaire while getting free cars for his wife? And Cory Booker, again, would not commit to the current president. You talk about chaos. You talk about chaos and obscene rhetoric that kind of spurred a lot of the anger in this country, that if you elect Donald Trump, the world's going to end. The Constitution's going to be gone. With the he's never going to leave office. He is going to be a dictator on the first day, all this stuff. And unfortunately for Joe Biden, the last thing he said in his last rally was there should be a target on Trump. And then we have a shooting Saturday night. With me right now is Kaylee McGee White. Kaylee is somebody that is not a big Trumper, did not vote for him in 2016, was for DeSantis, I believe, through the primary. But things changed Saturday. Kaylee, welcome back. Brian Kilmeade here. What changed for you Saturday after seeing what you saw?
I think it's been changing for me really for the past several months, you know, starting with the Democrats' lawfare campaign against former President Donald Trump. But yeah, as you mentioned, I didn't vote for him in 2016. I voted pretty reluctantly for him in 2020 because I was pretty disillusioned with his COVID policies at that point. But I recognized he was still vastly better than Joe Biden. And yes, I supported other candidates in the 2024 GOP primary because I thought it was time for the GOP to move forward from the Trump era. But, you know, watching what unfolded on Saturday, and I think, you know, the one image that just is at the top of everyone's minds right now of Trump standing back up, defiantly raising his fist in the air and encouraging people to keep fighting for their country, reassuring them that he was okay. It was an image of courage that you just don't see often, and it really – everyone knew as they were watching it that we were watching history happen. And I think at that point, you also just realized that if Democrats are so afraid of this man that they're willing to use the courts against him, if they're willing to try to bankrupt him, and if he inspires so much hate in people that they would even try to kill him, that is someone, in my opinion, worth fighting for on our behalf. And so that's where the calculation has significantly changed for myself, and I know for many other Americans as well.
Yeah, we'll see, and we'll see what the polls say now, because I don't even think Democrats are firmly behind their nominee, obviously. But Robert Costa is reporting that, judging by the circumstances and the extreme condition, the extreme event that happened with the assassination attempt on Donald Trump, it looks like Democrats have agreed to basically stand down on Joe Biden's candidacy as running for reelection. And he is doing that NBC interview in a few hours, we understand, this afternoon. At the same time, he's going to be in a news cycle that has former President Donald Trump be appearing for the first time since Saturday, possibly expected tonight, and naming a vice president any moment, sometime today. Your thoughts about the Democrats' move?
I think that they have no good options left. I mean, I think that none of them really want to go ahead with Biden, but they have no choice at this point. Because you're right, in this news cycle, which is not just going to be dominated about the assassination attempt on Trump, but also on Trump's ability to really unite the GOP at this moment. You know, we're here in Milwaukee this week, and we just learned the other day that Nikki Haley is going to be speaking at the convention. DeSantis is going to be speaking at the convention. The entire party is rallying around the former president in a pretty unprecedented way. And in a news cycle about that, to foment further division within their own party among the Democratic Party, it would just be a complete disaster. So they have no point at this point. They have no option other than to rally behind Biden, who is a weak candidate, especially when you compare the images of the two candidates at this point. So, you know, it is what it is. They have no options left. And I think that's why you're seeing reports from people like Costa, from Axios, saying Democrats have resigned themselves to another Trump presidency. They know it's over. I think a lot of other people know it's over. And that's as good as it's going to get for them.
But think about this. They've tried everything to destroy him. They impeached him twice, tried to impeach him twice. All the court cases. Another one just got dismissed today, Eileen Cannon. It'll be appealed, but the documents case goes down. And then we see the conviction only bring more money into his coffers because everyone knows it was a sham trial. And then you have the January 6th case, the Georgia case, the Keystone Cops, two terrible human beings trying to prosecute a former president with no substance behind it. And then they're trying to take all his money in two civil cases, one of which the accuser doesn't even remember the year in which it happened. And the Democrats are saying, we can't do anything else. He keeps getting stronger. Can you imagine what they must be thinking, Kaylee?
Well, they must be panicking. And I think that, you know, one of the great benefits of what happened this past weekend, and I think, is that, you know, Trump's courage has this contagious effect where, I don't know if you've noticed this, Brian, but I certainly have. When I was flying up from D.C. to Milwaukee the other day, I saw people wearing MAGA hats out in public in D.C. for, I think, the first time ever. And you feel this massive shift taking place where people are not afraid to say that they're conservatives anymore. People are not afraid to say, you know what, actually, I am going to support Donald Trump. And for a very long time, they were, because the exact same tactics that Democrats have been using against Trump are the ones that they use against everyone who supports him. You're called a racist. You're called a xenophobe. You're called a fascist. Joe Biden himself got up on a stage and called Trump supporters semi-fascists, right? And I think that what happened on Saturday has finally dispelled any sort of social taboo for what it means to be a conservative, for what it means to be a Trump supporter. And I do think that that will have an electoral effect for sure.
And by the way, this just crossed federal agents are still searching for a motive with Thomas Matthew Cook, who shot and wounded the former president, killed somebody. Agents wearing shirts emblazoned with the Pittsburgh Bureau of a federal investigation are now questioning the parents. We know there were explosives in the car, explosives in the house. Having said that, I was stunned but yet not surprised by the tone on ABC. Their two most experienced anchors and reporters, Martha Raddatz and George Stephanopoulos. Listen to this exchange, Cut 26.
President Trump and his supporters have contributed to this violent rhetoric as well.
Well, absolutely, George. Fight, fight. That was his first instinct.
Fight, fight, fight. I think what we're hearing from people is that's not the message that we want to be sending right now.
He's speaking very, very strongly against President Biden.
Who's in the hospital?
And that was a Republican speaking out. But the next one was obviously the last one was Wolf Blitzer. Your thoughts about that? Fight, fight, fight is lauded by most to show you're not going to keep me down, kind of the American spirit. They see that being violent.
They're such hypocrites. The fact is that every time political violence happens, if it's political violence against the left, it's the right's fault, according to the mainstream media. But if political violence happens against conservatives, it's also the right's fault, according to the mainstream media. There is nothing that Trump could have said in that moment that would have justified him in the eyes of these people, because they just hate him. They're so biased. They have Trump derangement syndrome. And so there's nothing he could have said that would have eased their concerns at this point. And they're just going to pick him apart constantly. And because of that, and again, they do the same thing to Trump supporters as well. It's an all-encompassing hatred toward everything that he is and everything that he represents.
No question. So now we have the RNC and we have the president saying, I'm going to change the tone of my speech. I had a humdinger ready to go. I was going to get everyone excited. Now I want to bring back, I want to bring together the country. I want to bring together the world. Here's what Reince Priebus said about this convention after speaking to the former president. Cut 31.
If you had to ask me, I would say this convention is going to be epic. And we have a president, obviously, through tragedy yesterday, and we had loss of life and hopefully no more. But he is ready to go. And I think the unwavering attitude that he is bringing now to Milwaukee is going to even further energize this crowd. Certainly reflective, you know, in tragedy, God is our refuge. And I think most people feel that way today. But we also, as Americans, have to come out of this and move forward.
So we'll see if that transfers. We know that's going to be they're going to try to make it much more positive. Kaylee, just put on your Nostradamus hat for a second. A month from now, will we be talking about how the tone has still changed, and we're talking more about policies and less on personalities and people, less extreme? Do you think some permanent change has taken place?
I think certainly on Trump's part, a permanent change has taken place. But, I mean, that was sort of happening even before the assassination attempt. You know, we think about the debate between Biden and Trump, and we compare the Trump that we saw last month to the Trump that we saw in 2020. Trump this time around has been much more focused, much more policy-oriented, and he's already sort of established a much calmer tone than he's had in years past. And I think this has very much so solidified that for him. However, I don't think that Americans should, you know, hold their breath to wait for Democrats to do the same. Already yesterday, AOC was back on Twitter calling Trump a fascist. They're going to keep repeating the exact same talking points.
I didn't see that. I did not see that. But I know Cori Bush, thankfully, is trailing by 23 points in her primary. So hopefully she'll be finished. Who still thinks we should defund the police? That's another member of the squad. Kaylee, always great talking to you. I look forward to seeing you on the floor here at the convention.
Yes, see you soon.
Kaylee McGee-White, coming back next. When we return, Bernie Moreno wants to upend Sherrod Brown and take that Senate seat in Ohio. Can he close the gap in using the momentum that the right seemingly has right now? We'll talk to him when we come back in Milwaukee.
More of Brian Kilmeade live from the Republican National Convention next. Live from the Republican National Convention, it's Brian Kilmeade.
I mean, it's been 4th of July. We've been hearing fireworks. I mean, people are saying they thought there were fireworks. Well, I fired AR-15s and other guns. I knew there were gunshots. Immediately, everybody went down on the ground. I put my hands on my cousin's shoulders. I said, stay down, stay down. And I was looking around because you don't believe what goes through your head when you hear gunshots like that in a crowd.
Yeah, and he thought they killed him, and he didn't. And Donald Trump, in reflection, especially after watching it back, has told Michael Goodwin that, you know, he shouldn't be here right now, that he cocked his head to look at a chart that he was going to use later in the speech but decided to use it early. And that's the only reason he broke eye contact with the crowd. With me right now is Ohio Senate candidate. This happened in Pennsylvania. That is Bernie Moreno. Bernie, great to see you.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
Your reaction to what went down on Saturday, that eyewitness account, it must be a surreal experience being there.
It's unbelievable. The reality is President Trump dodged a bullet, but so did the country. The country would be in a totally different place today if that bullet had moved less than an eighth of an inch. And I think it was divine intervention. There's no question in my mind about that. Here we are, RNC week. You're seeing a Republican Party that's fully united, which is fantastic to see.
Unlike 2016, I don't know, where were you in 2016?
Oh, remember, the convention was in Cleveland. I was in Cleveland.
Did you go?
Of course. Okay. I was on the host committee. Yeah, I was a business guy. I wasn't in politics, right, but I was one of the hosts. And the party, you know, remember, John Kasich wouldn't walk into the convention
Ted
hall.
Ted Cruz wouldn't endorse him.
Ted Cruz didn't endorse. Got booed on stage. This is not that. This is every Republican is united. We've got to save this country, Brian. And I think fundamentally, these are no longer Republican versus Democratic issues. This is what's good for the Republic, what's good for America, and that's what we're going to see this week.
And I think the president wants to unite. He ripped up his speech. He's going to come out with another. And he says he wants to talk about uniting everybody. What do you want in that? How do you unite people that differ so much on, let's say, foreign policy, on the border, on spending? They don't like the tax plan the president passed when he was president before. They want to change all that. And what's your thought about? There's a lot more social programs, the rescue package, the inflation reduction deal. Democrats love that. Republicans don't. How do you bring people together to disagree like that?
Well, I mean, I think it's common sense that you should have people that come here legally like I did. I came here from Columbia, South America.
Oh, did you say common sense?
Common sense, right? Common sense. People came here. You want people to come here legally as immigrants that add to America, but not illegally. Now, are there people that disagree with that? Sure. But they're the minority in this country. They're happy to be very loud. You want low prices. You want low inflation.
Right.
You want American energy, not beg foreign countries for energy. You want peace and stability around the world. You want safe communities and good schools. You want to have a vibrant, strong middle class. Those should not be controversial issues.
Unfortunately, it seems we've lost common sense. And you think that women should be playing in women's sports. You might also believe that. That's archaic, evidently. For most people, including the current president of the United States, do you expect them for 2 weeks they're pulling their ads off and they just want to cool the temperatures down? How long do you expect this to last?
Well, I don't give them a pass because you can't be the guy who cries fire in a crowded arena and then bemoan the fact that people got hurt exiting the taking the exits. They've been calling him Hitler for 8 years. The shooter is 20 years old. From the moment he was 12 years old, he's been told that Donald Trump is a reincarnation of Adolf Hitler. If you could take a shot at Hitler in 1935, would you be a good person or a bad person? That's how he viewed it. That's on them. It's on them, meaning the Democrats, but also the mainstream media. You know, in my own hometown, the Cleveland Plain Dealer, the largest newspaper in the state, the editor has called Trump Hitler for the last 8 years. It's the bat signal that lunatics like that shooter answered. They have to own up for that and repudiate their own language.
How much could he help you in Ohio?
Well, President Trump will win Ohio by 12 to 15 points, easy. We capture the majority of the Trump vote. We win. The reality is Sherrod Brown's been in office after graduating from Yale University, by the way, with a major in Russian studies. When Nixon was in the White House, that's when he first ran for elected office. This guy has a track record of voting the most extreme liberal positions. We'll expose that. He doesn't represent Ohio. Been there too long. I think most Americans agree being in elected office shouldn't be something you do for your whole life.
How'd you make your money?
I bought a small little car dealership in my 30s. Turned into a great group of car dealerships, did $1 billion in sales, sold that company, started a tech company, just sold that. I got rid of all and any entanglements I have so I can, when I go to D.C., I can represent the people of Ohio properly.
Your reaction to this, this is from a staffer, from Benny Thompson. I don't condone violence, but please get you some shooting lessons so you don't miss next time. Oops, that wasn't me talking. Benny Johnson said, I was made aware of this post made by a staffer, and she is no longer in my employment. Lee Zeldin said, nobody would like that to be hired by me. Your thought?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he got caught. You don't think that the inside meetings and the staffs, when there aren't cameras, when there aren't microphones, that they say these things? Jack Black just said this at supposedly a comedy show, talking about killing the President of the United States. Imagine if the tables were turned. Imagine if Jim Jordan's staffer said something like that about Biden, which he never would, by the way. Imagine how he would be.
It would be awful. How do we get a hold? How do we support your candidacy?
BernieMarino.com. Whatever you can do to help would be fantastic.
Bernie Marino, closing the gap in Ohio.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.